All right. So TJ, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Good. You too.
How's everything going? I understand you just came back from El Camino, huh?
Yeah, we just came back on Friday. So we got everyone back. We have two people that are still over in France that went from the Camino over to France, and they'll be back later this week. So everybody got back safely. So
and you look good. You don't look exhausted. You look
No, not much jet lagged. So, you know, you sleep on the way over and you stay awake on the way back. So that's kind of how, that's how it works.
That's great. That's great. Well, as we're going to share with our listeners, this podcast is about the Camino. And I know my first introduction to the Camino was that movie, The Way, right? With who was in it? Martin Sheen, right?
Martin Sheen started. And Emilio Estevez.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing movie, very heart-wrenching, beautiful. And obviously he was looking for his son, if I remember that correctly. But the Camino, and that was shot at the Camino, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's actually shot on the Camino Francés route. So some of the towns that he went through, I, you know, have been through and taken people through. So yeah, it's quite the experience to see that and then to know that you were there. So yeah, it's great.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk about, so the Camino essentially is a pilgrimage, right? And what is a pilgrimage? It's an opportunity to take a journey, to seek more of a spiritual connection with God, to learn something about yourself, right? To learn more about God. Tell us a little bit about the relationship between the Camino and someone's journey to be on a pilgrimage on the Camino.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think of a pilgrimage, you know, the definition of a pilgrimage, and I you know, just took a quick note, is a pilgrimage is a journey to a sacred place, right? And we've been doing that for a long time. Christians have been traveling to sacred places. And a pilgrimage is a special time of grace and mercy. So for us, you know, looking at the pilgrimage and looking at, you know, what we're trying to gather from the Camino. And there's a difference between doing a pilgrimage and being a tourist, right? And I think it was, I want to get his name right and give credit where credit is due. Father Frank Fahey wrote in the European Association of Social Anthropologists about what's the difference between being on a pilgrimage and what's being a tourist. And there were eight elements: faith, penance, community, sacred space. The other one was rituals, offering, celebration, and perseverance. And so when we think about a Camino, we think about the faith-based, right? And so we think about what is it that we're trying to bring with us. And for most of the folks that I've walked with the Camino or brought people on the Camino, and especially just doing one in May and then one in June, you know, very spiritual. And so bringing all of your intentions, bringing all of your, you know, the prayer requests that you have and walking that long walk and really trying to bring those intentions to life.
That's awesome. So I know that you can join the Camino at various points, right? But where does it typically start? Is it like 300 miles, or it starts in Portugal and ends in Spain?
No, it usually starts on the Camino Francés is the main one that most people go on. And that starts in Saint-Jean in France. And
okay.
So that's 800 kilometers, about 500 miles.
Wow.
And it usually takes anywhere between 30 to 40 days to walk that full length. And most people don't have that time off from work. So people do it in segments, and they call them stages. And so we tend to do 2 weeks at a time, which can be a stage, stage and a half, two stages, depending on how much you're walking. And so, but yeah, a full Camino would be that 800 kilometer walk. And that starts on Saint-Jean over in France and then comes through Spain and walks in the middle of Spain, the northern middle of Spain, and ends in Santiago itself. But there are over 600 routes that you can walk on the Camino to get to Santiago, which is where everybody wants to get to see St. James' tomb and to hug the big guy on the altar, so they say.
That's amazing. So is it various town streets or paths? So what is it like being on the Camino?
Oh, yeah. So I get this question all the time. So someone's going to ask, it's like, well, what kind of terrain are we going to walk on? You're going to walk through mountains. You're going to walk through valleys. You know, you're going to walk on pavement. You know, each segment or each stage has a certain amount of pavement that you're going to walk on. And that's because you're coming through the towns. So you might come through a small town and you just might be on a dirt road, pebble rock, slate, going through Osobrero, which is one of the mountains that you go through. You're walking along this trail that's just nothing but dirt and rock for hours upon hours. And then you come up to the top of the hill and, you know, you're in a little tiny village. And then as you go down the hill, you know, you'll be walking on pavement. It's really all different types of terrain. I would think that, you know, most of the time you're going to be walking on a trail that's alongside of a road. And it might go out into the forest a little bit or up through the mountain pass. But most of the time you're going to see, as you get into cities, you'll be able to kind of know, you know, if you're looking at a map and looking at the topology of the map, you'd say, oh, we're in the city and I see the highway, you know, and you can see distance cars from far away, but you're never really that close to them until you get into the cities. We're not walking along the highway for the most part.
Mm-hmm. And where do you sleep?
Yeah, we do an array of everything. So I like to mix it up. So most people think of the hostel. So if you think of the movie, The Way, and he comes into that very first city, I don't remember if it's in Burgos or where he's at, but you know, there's 50 beds and they're bunk beds and everyone's right. snoring and everyone's sleeping and there's noise everywhere. We try to stay away from those. So we'll do hostels. We'll do an albergue. We'll do hotels. So we're not too unfamiliar with the tourist side of us. You know, the hotels can be various in terms of, like, if you think of a dormitory setting where it's two people in a room, you might stay in a monastery that has that. You know, one of the routes that we just walked with the men's group, we had the dormitory style in the monastery itself. So it's an old monastery that's now basically a public place to sleep. And they put two people in a room, very small showers. It's really just a bed and a shower. That's really what you're looking for. In more of the hostel situations, you are putting more people into a room, 10, 15, 20, and so on. And you're just sleeping on a cot bed, getting up and may not even have a shower. Some places don't have showers that are offered. And then the next place you'll want to stay is a little bit nicer so you can get a shower or find a shower along the way if there's a stream somewhere that you can dip into.
Wow. So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of everything.
So let's talk about the spiritual component. I mean, you have a lot of time, right? I guess there is some fellowship and, you know, conversations, but you can only take that so far, right? So I'm sure there's a lot of reflection, a lot of prayer time. Do you travel with a priest or a religious, and do you get to go to daily mass? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the different trips have different things to offer. So if we're going with a priest, then obviously daily mass, whether it's on the wayside, which we've done, we recently an article just came out on the Catholic Moment here in Indiana at the Lafayette Diocese. And in that you can see the very first page, there's a priest giving mass on the wayside. And so if we can't do mass at a church because of the way we're walking, then we'll just do mass on the wayside. But most of the times the priest can come celebrate. All of the masses are in Spanish. And not that you need to know Spanish, the mass is the mass. So as long as you understand, you know, where they're at in the mass, whether it's the liturgy of the word or the liturgy of the Eucharist, you should be able to follow along just fine. We do offer and give everyone an English translation sheet so they can follow along and see where they are in the mass. But it's not necessary. I think sometimes the mass can just be a very reflective thing, and you don't always need to, you know, understand what's going on to know that you're still a part of the mass. But we do offer the mass if we have a priest going. If we don't, which some of the trips don't have priests going with them or with us, then we just try to make the masses that we can, and we'll pre-plan ahead and say, okay, if we can get here by this time in this village, there's a mass at 7 o'clock. Sometimes it may be mass in the morning. And then there's some days where we just can't make mass because the churches are not open. You know, they have the same problem in Spain as we do with the lack of priests and the diocese and the parishes. So a lot of times they're just not open at certain times of the year because the priests are managing, you know, two or three different parishes. And so a smaller parish may just not ever be open, or maybe, you know, the third Sunday of the month or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I think from the perspective of the spiritualness, it really is about what do we bring to that Camino. And so whether we're walking with, you know, someone who's twice our age or twice our younger our age, depending on where you're at in life, there is a reflection period of being together and talking together, praying the rosary together, doing the Divine Mercy Chaplet. We purposely have hour of silence. So that we can get to that Divine Mercy Chaplet at 3 o'clock if we're walking during that time. And so there is a lot of time of just self-contemplative being contemplative into yourself and just having that moment to be reflective. And then there's a lot of time where you're just talking. And for the most part, you know, depending on who you're walking with, you're going to be talking about the church. You're going to be talking about your faith. You're going to be talking about the prayer requests that you may have offered at the last prayer mass, and what's going on back home and people's struggles. And then a lot of the times you're just looking around, you're looking at nature and you're just like, wow, I can't believe that God just created this vast area that we're in and how beautiful it is with the mountains and the sky and just open land. And so it's a little bit of everything. And then there's also the time where you're just talking about normal things. Like we might've stopped in a place and saw a sports clip of, you know, something that's going on back home. And so everyone starts talking about some experience they've had. So the conversations can go deep and wide, which is great, which is what you want on the Camino when you're with a group of people, for sure.
Now, you said you just came from one. How long was your Camino?
We did 3 days in Fatima. And so we were able to celebrate Mass in Fatima. The priest that we had was able to celebrate at the outside chapel there. And then we took a bus to our starting point. And then we started walking in from Oia, which is the south west coast of Spain. And we walked for 7 days. And so they did an average of 15 miles a day on average. And then we spent 3 days into Santiago. So during that time, the very first day, we walked through the mountain pass. I call it the Holy Roman Roads. It's rock and it's a path that they bring horses on, and there's still people that will take a tractor on that road, and that's how they get through to get to the timber and whatnot. And so that was a big pass. And then there's times where we're just walking on pavement. And then we get off the pavement and we walk on a trail. And we went to Mass every single day. And we also had wayside Mass with our priest that was there. And in one town, particularly in Agardia, where we started, we were in an outside arena that was concrete, and he just stood at the bottom of the auditorium there, and we were up in the stands, and he just did Mass. You know, we have 19 of us this last trip, and it was great. Every day we were able to do Mass. You know, there was confessions along the way if you needed it, not only from him, but from other priests that we stopped and saw along the way. So yeah, it was a great trip.
That sounds amazing. I've shared this with my wife. It's something that it's kind of something I've always wanted to do. But you know, you need the time, like you had said, you need at least 2 weeks to do it, but I am fearful. I mean, it's like 15 miles a day, you know, what do you need? How do you prepare for it? I mean, do you need to be in shape? I mean, I worry that, I would be left behind, you know?
No, because of the way we walk, anybody can do it. I had a 78-year-old lady walk this last time. Last year, I had an 87-year-old lady walk. Had a 21-year-old female walk this time. And everybody's in different shapes and different parts of their life, whether they're, you know, dealing with something medical or they just don't walk a lot. But yeah, no, you don't really have to be in shape per se. What I would say is you need to walk. And you need to walk at home, and you need to be doing 3 to 5 miles a day, but not strenuous miles, just getting that robust of, hey, I can walk for 3 miles and not need to stop and take a break. But that being said, we take a lot of breaks. So we might walk for 2 hours and then we stop at a cafe and everybody gets, you know, a water or a soda or whatever, and some fruit and a pastry. And we sit for 15, 20 minutes, and then we get back on and we go another 2 hours. And when you break up the day, those 15 miles on average go pretty quick. I mean, an 8-hour day of walking and stopping is pretty quick. And that includes lunch and stopping for lunch. For, you know, 30, 45 minutes. And I would say that the average person doesn't usually have a problem walking the Camino. Now, granted, there's going to be some aches and some, you know, some achy here and a foot issue here, or, you know, you're putting too much in your backpack. But in terms of what you need, you just need good shoes. I always suggest using walking poles, which are just, you know, traditional REI walking poles, and then a backpack. And the backpack, you know, can be whatever brand you want, but it really just needs to be as light as possible. So when we give out the packing list for people to pack, it's 3 shirts, 3 socks, and 3 pairs of undergarments. And that's all you need, because we're washing laundry as we go. You can hang it from your backpack and let it dry. So really, you just need your bare essentials. Matter of fact, one guy that walked after the Camino, he went back home and he started doing the art of detachment. And there's, I think one of the saints talk about detachment from the real world, and he just got rid of everything. He just started going through and he was like, I walked for 15 days and all I had were three pairs of clothes, of change of clothes, and my sleeping gear and some toiletries. I don't need all of this other stuff that I have in my house. And it really changed him. But you know, that's kind of going to one extreme there, but really you don't need a whole lot. And with that light backpack, it allows you to walk long periods of time. The good shoes, we just use trail running shoes, you know, like tennis shoes that are a trail shoe. You don't need big boots. You don't need big mountain hiking socks on. The lighter, the better. And it really just is making sure that you're healthy enough to be able to do the walk. But in terms of a lot of training, you know, I tell everyone just walk as much as you can, but don't go out and do a 20-mile day thinking that's going to be the average. Because even though you might walk 20 miles a day, it's going to be broken up into segments and it's not going to feel like a 20-mile day.
Yeah, that's awesome. I try to walk, you know, between 2 to 5 miles 4 times a week.
And oh, that's great.
Yeah, I like it on a multiple of levels because it kind of keeps me shape, keeps my endurance going. And I like it because surprisingly, you know, when you walk, you know, usually I listen to this stuff, but I intentionally make a point of not listening to anything because that allows me time to pray. And when you're walking, your mind wanders, right? And it really allows, I guess, the Holy Spirit to somewhat engage when you least likely expect it. Like, and I'm sure that probably happens, right? People are just like walking, looking at stuff, and you're silent and you're praying. I would think a lot of that would happen, right? Because there's nothing left to do, you know, if you're not in conversation, you look around and you pray and you wander. So I would think, can you personally share any kind of experiences where, you know, you heard the Lord speak or you feel a strong sense of unity with God in the beauty of what he created, you know, in the Camino? And then obviously you have a goal of getting to Santiago and really being in the presence of St. James. I mean, it's like really overwhelming to think about the spiritual component when you really think about what it is that you're doing. So I would think that there would be a lot of spiritual experiences. Can you share?
Yeah, definitely. I'll share mine and I'll share some others that I know of. So I think that when you first start walking out on the Camino, it's this bolt of energy, right? It's, oh, we're going to walk and we're going to go for 10, 15 days or whatever the case may be. And everyone's got this high level of energy. And what you soon realize is those times that you're walking and that repetitive walking, like you're talking about, you do find a moment where, especially in a group setting, the group kind of, it's like an accordion, the group kind of separates, the faster people up front, the slower people in the back. But also you have to be mindful of just, I need that, right? I need to be slow. I need to find out where my rhythm is and where my pace is. And I think that for me personally, one of the things that I love to do is I just talk to God. I just ask for forgiveness for whatever's on my mind or my heart that day. And in the silence of walking, even though I might be standing next to someone and we're not having a conversation at all, and we're just both walking, and this experience happened multiple times in all the trips that I've done, where we might say, look at that tree, that's a beautiful tree. And then for the next 30 minutes, not talk at all. And I'm thinking about the tree and I'm thinking, wow, how awesome is God that he just created all of this for us to enjoy. And here we are walking. And to think about all the people that have walked before us. I mean, this route has been around for thousands of years. And you know, everyone walking back to St. James, and when they carried St. James and his bones to Santiago, what an amazing task that might have been. So we kind of really get into that reflective piece. And one of the things that we did, or that we do on the trips, is we really try to say, okay, let's think about this today, or let's pray for these intentions today. And when you start out walking and you have those prayer intentions, I feel, at least for me, it just deepens the walk that you go through. And you can then really, to what you're saying, your mind just starts wondering, but it allows you to talk to God and allows the Holy Spirit to just come into you and say, what's on my mind? Where am I today? You know, I'm walking, and why am I walking, or who am I walking for? And so for me, the very first time I did it on my own. And then as I went along the way, I met people, and I met people who were struggling. One lady that I met was losing, she had just lost her mom and her dad 1 year, each one parent 1 year and one parent the next year. And she spent maybe 10 days, alone. And I was the first person she had seen, and it was just me listening to her. And then when I separated from her, it was able for me to then pray for her and say, wow, how hard must that be to be a 25-year-old that just lost both your parents, and you're walking on this Camino, and she was walking for about, I'd say maybe 35 days to do the whole Camino. And I only met her for a small segment. And to really think about my own family and to think about the things that I needed to think about or that I needed to pray about, it'll really, on the time on the Camino really allows you to have that reflective moment of your life, where you are, the things that you've experienced, and the things that you want. Another case example is a lady that I met. She went there and she was searching for silence. And silence in that she wanted to get rid of the noise between her head. That's what I call it. And it was really just, you know, her needing to find her faith and to deepen her faith. And she was so impacted by the silence of the Camino that when she made it to Santiago, it was so loud that she ended up getting a ruptured eardrum, and she was deaf for the rest of her Camino. But it was the silence that she needed to be able to be closer to God in her heart, because she was really struggling to find that inner peace. Another gentleman that walked with me, he was walking for his grandson, and his grandson had almost died, and his name was James, and we're walking to go to St. James. And so he was really walking for the intention of his grandson and all the prayers that he was lifting up. And each time we would go to mass, or we would find ourselves talking to each other on the path, it was always about the things that we wish, you know, we can make better in the world, or the things that we can make better in ourselves. So I think to go back to answer your question, you know, that all that moment, all that contemplative time that you get on the Camino day in and day out, whether it's 7 days or 35 days, is really time spent praying, searching, talking to God, allowing your mind and your heart to just wrestle with being quiet and allowing God to come into your life. And that's a powerful thing in the world that we live in, that's so busy with the hustle and bustle of everyday life. We just don't have that time. And that's one of the things that I love so much about the Camino, not only going to Santiago and to St. James and all of that history, but it is the time to just be contemplative and to be able to seek the things that we need to seek in our life, and to hopefully maybe pray about the things that we need to change in our lives. So yeah, we get a lot of that day in and day out. So it's great.
You did share some great examples of some of the people that are there. Do you find couples or married couples that go on this, or parents with their kids? Any experiences like that?
Yeah. So this past trip that we just made, we had two married couples, one older and one younger. And it was quite interesting. The older couple had been married for 35 years. So they're kind of set in their marital bliss, right? And then the other couple had only been married for 2 years. And so when the husband didn't want to walk, the wife was quick to say, yes, you're walking. And it was kind of one of those things where the older couple were, okay, I'm going to stay back and you're going to go forward. There was more separation between the two. It's quite fun to watch people and the dynamics that you get into. There was also another couple on a previous trip that had mother and daughter, the daughter being a 22-year-old college student, and the mom was like, okay, I'll go on this trip with you. And both found, you know, equal experiences that were wonderful along the Camino. One being that the younger daughter could walk faster and the mom needed a little bit more slow time. And so you kind of have to adjust for that. But when they come into the cities and they go to church and they're together and they're meeting all these other folks, we meet all people from everywhere. I've got friends now in Ireland, in Turkey, in Germany, in Sweden, in Australia, people that I just meet every single day. And you may see them for the first day, and you may not see them until the 10th day, and then you may see them in Santiago again. And you may never see them again, but they're touching you in different ways. And so it's really great to see all the folks that do go on the Camino with us and with other folks. We had this past trip, we had seven Purdue University students, And we had the other 8 folks or 10 folks were regular adults. So we're mingling working adults with college students that some of them are just graduating and they're talking about their work. So there's a lot of dynamic that goes into that and a lot of interpersonal communication of, wow, to be 21 years old and to be 78 years old and walking hand by hand on the Camino together, it's quite impressive to see how much respect each other gives each other, whether you're young or old, because you're both doing the same task. You're both walking that mountain. You're both walking into the valley. You're both walking in the heat. And it's quite the experience to see all those people truly intermingle together.
So obviously this means a lot to you. At some point in time, you must have went on it, right? You were impacted and you put together this company, Follow My Camino Travel Agency, right? Is that the name of your organization?
Yeah, Follow My Camino.
So it's pretty amazing that you have such a passion that you created this opportunity for people like myself and others to, you know, go on this pilgrimage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I first went on my own, I did a lot of pre-planning and I watched as many videos as I could. And I talked to people through Facebook and Messenger and trying to get little tips and tricks. And when I started on my own, I met 4 Americans that were women who didn't know each other and they did the same thing. They were planning the same way. And one of the things we came across was there's got to be a better way to be prepared for these things. And then also there's a lot of people who don't want to go on their own. And that's really where I came from, the angle of I want to bring people on the Camino, but a lot of folks don't want to plan. It's a lot of work to plan a trip. And they also don't know what they're doing or don't know how to go about doing it. And they just get frustrated and they say, okay, well, maybe I'll find another way. And then I reached out to a couple of companies that are out there and they charge an exorbitant amount of money. And I said, there's got to be a better way and a cheaper way to do it. We shouldn't have to pay the prices that we pay for a lot of booking agencies and whatnot. So let's find the most economical way to do this. And so that's kind of where Follow My Camino came from, was being able to take people, not only in my local diocese, I've got people from California that just went with us, Colorado, you know, all the way to Nebraska and Iowa to New York City. So trying to bring people together to say, hey, look, let's walk the Camino together, but let's do it in a way that is easier for everyone. And I'm very much a planner, so I enjoy that aspect of it, but there's a lot of folks that don't. And they just want to be able to wake up in the morning, know where they're going to go and walk and not have to worry about the headaches and the hassles that come along with, you know, something happening to someone or a taxi ride is needed or flights and all of that good stuff. And so that's kind of where it all started from. And so we've got it down to a science now, you know, gone through many, many iterations of things, working through things to where we just basically get it as low as a price as possible. And it includes your airfare and all of your accommodations and all the taxis. And you get to have a couple of excursions in Santiago, all included in that package that is much cheaper than I've ever found online, because it's not about money at the end of the day. For me, it's all about bringing people to the Camino. And so as long as there is a way to make it as cheap as possible, then that's what we were about. And still staying at places that feel safe and still going on the route that everybody wants to go on the route. And so that's kind of how we started that. And then being able to just have folks from all different ages knowing that they're all walking together and they can help each other out is really a great feeling as well. A lot of the feedback that I get is I would have never done this myself. And even if I could have, I wouldn't have, because it was so much better to do it in a group setting. You know, we're not doing 150 people. That just ends up being a tourist trip rather than a pilgrimage. But we are allowing it to be a bigger size group so that you can have those better interactions with people. That's kind of how we started.
That's awesome. I mean, it's so important to be organized and have someone show you, you know, where you need to go, what you need to do. It's great that it's all inclusive. How large are your groups typically?
The last two we just did in May and June were 15 men. And then this last one was 19. You know, we try to stay under 30. We've got one planned for next spring. I think they have 24 people from a parish down south, I think in Kentucky. And the priest is going to come And so I don't think any more than 30, because any more than that, you kind of lose a little bit of the essence of what the Camino should be, as well as you've just got too many people that it becomes more of a tourist trap than anything. And we don't want that. We want it to be a very spiritual, a very bonding experience. But I would say right now the average is 15 to 20.
Okay.
But no more than 30 on any trip would I do.
I'm very interested because you said this last trip you started at Fatima. So you kind of like have these additional components to it. I mean, that's really appealing.
Yeah, it's a bonus. It's definitely a bonus. And especially when there's a priest, because all the priests go for free. So if there's a group out there that has a priest, the priest will go for free. And so we really want to make mass happen for everyone that's going. And so because of the Portugal route, which is the west route, and again, most people could only take 2 weeks off of vacation at a time, it allowed us to say, you're still going to walk on the Camino and get the Compostela, which we'll talk about, but it allowed us to also do mass in Fatima. So we spent 3 days, we fly into Lisbon and spent 3 days in Fatima, 2 nights in Fatima, and then we leave and we take a bus that I arrange to the starting point, and you still get to walk up the coast. You still get to see the ocean to your left or to your right or whatever we're going around, and then get into Santiago, and they had 3 days in Santiago.
Wow.
So for a 15-day trip, you're walking for seven, and then the rest of it is spent between Fatima, Santiago, and flying in and out. And for the price point, you can't beat it. Going to Lourdes and Fatima on a normal excursion, which I've done with my previous parish, you know, was $4,000. For the amount that we paid for this, you know, you're getting all of that minus it's even cheaper.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that we're really trying to make sure that we incorporate the Catholic side of us, the spiritual side of us. And if we can land somewhere and spend a day somewhere and really get the essence of the country and our religion, then that's great. Lourdes is another example. We'll start in Lourdes in the spring or next July, I think. And we'll start in Lourdes for 3 days. We'll walk from St. John to Pamplona. We'll spend a day with the running of the bulls, and then we'll finish in Burgos. And that'll be about a 15-16 day trip. And it'll be a wonderful pilgrimage on the Camino, as well as being able to go see some of the more Catholic iconic places that we want to go to.
I love that. I love that you're really packing in those other components, which I think makes the whole trip very attractive.
Oh, it's great.
It's really cool. So I want to make sure I'm hearing you right. So if we were to bring our own priest, the priest goes for free?
Priest goes for free.
Ooh,
yep.
I like
every
that.
Every single time.
Wow. Yep. So we could kind of bring our own spiritual director with us if we wanted to.
Yeah, you can bring anyone. And, you know, I mean, again, we had our priest from the Purdue University. He's a Dominican. And then in May, we had a diocesan priest, Father Martin, come. And within the last group, we had people that weren't even, that did not belong to St. Thomas Aquinas in Purdue, but also coming from other parts of the country. One girl came from California, one from Louisville, one from Nebraska and Iowa. They had no clue who the priest was, but they get to celebrate the mass with us. They get to go to confession with him if they choose to. When we were in Fatima, he presided over the mass in Fatima. And one of our Purdue students was able to be an altar or server and really experience that experience in Fatima and have that dedicated mass. It was great. It's a great trip.
This is great. Sign me up, man. This is something I definitely want to do. I'm seeing in my notes, I don't know, I don't want to say something that it's not true, but is there a discount code that you're offering? Is that?
Yeah. Because in July, we have the National Eucharist Congress in Indianapolis. And I'm a sponsor for that. And so we have a booth down there. And so the code is going to be NEC and then the word Camino. So NEC Camino, and that'll get a discount off of the next trip. And priests always fly for free anyway, so they don't even need the code. That's a great way for people to really, you know, hone in on the Camino, their local parishes, and get their priests to go and really experience the Camino in any way that they want.
Now, I mean, is this a time-limited discount, or will it be available if someone were to hear this a year from now? Would that discount still be available to them?
Yeah. Anyone that uses that code will be able to use that for sure, because there's no need to, you know, reduce that by any way. And so that NEC Camino code will get them $500 off their Camino trip.
Great. I think this is awesome, TJ. I mean, I love it. I mean, this is like a no-brainer. Anyone that wants to go on a pilgrimage, spend some time with God and see a part of the world that maybe they haven't seen, it's awesome. Is there anything else that you want to add or anything that you want to share with our viewers and listeners that maybe we haven't talked about?
Yeah, let's talk about Santiago for just a bit.
Okay.
So with Santiago, you know, obviously we're walking the way of St. James. The Frances route, which is the northern middle route, being the more traditional route. There's one called the Del Norte, which starts on the north side. So you're walking the north coast. And then there's the Portugal route. And those are pretty much the three routes that statistically that most people are walking. And when we get to Santiago, you get the documentation. And the first one is the Compostela. And that is the Latin, that's the church's document that says you officially walked the Camino, and it's in Latin. Mm. And the reason is because it goes all the way back to when they started the Camino and started issuing these documentations to the church and getting your name written down that, hey, I actually walked the Camino and here's where I started. And that's really a great document that a lot of people want. You can now get other documents as well, but that is the proof that you walk the Camino, that you put on your wall next to your shell, or your rock or a rosary or whatever. And that's a great momentous thing to take away to show that I actually walked the Camino and I had a great experience. The other one is a distance certificate. And that actually is a document that shows that you walked a certain amount of kilometers. And the Pilgrim's Office, which is where you go and get all these documents in Santiago, has every route listed with all the mileage in kilometers. And so when you put in that you started in Porto or in Lyon or in St. John, it automatically calculates the distance. This last group officially did 196 kilometers. So on paper, it's 196 kilometers. You multiply that by a couple hundred more miles on foot, and you know, you end up walking 250 kilometers easily.
Wow.
And then the third document that you can get is one from the Franciscan document, is from the Church of San Francisco, which is right there near the Pilgrim's Office. So you end up walking away with three different documents from your Camino trip. And I think it's a cost of €5 total. So it's a very inexpensive piece of paper to get, but it's a momentous piece of paper. And then the other thing you go to do is you get to actually go see the tomb of St. James underneath the altar. So when we come into the cathedral, the world's largest thurible, which they call the Buddha Famario, it swings back and forth, and it's in the movie The Way. Emilio Estevez is seen pulling it. I've actually had the experience of pulling it three times. Wow. So that was a great godsend for me. But you get to go underneath the altar and see the tomb of St. James. And then as you come out from underneath the altar, you go behind and up around, and there is the St. James that is in the altar. They have this metal, almost like a capoose on him, that you get to hug St. James. So you actually are hugging St. James. And I tell you, I've seen more people cry when they hug St. James or go see the tomb of St. James than they do with any other part of the experience on the Camino. Because it's the accumulation of everything you've just gone through to go see the St. James tomb and to say, this is where they brought him, right? He's one of the first three that got to see all the things that Jesus did. He was martyred. He's the first disciple to be martyred. And so it's just hugely impactful. And that's really, you know, what we're doing is we're walking to St. James and bringing all of our prayers and intentions and just laying it at the feet of his tomb. It's quite the experience. It really is.
Wow. Sure sounds it. Well, this is great. Well, thank you so much, TJ, for joining us. And I want to wish you and hopefully we'll meet up, you know, we're going to be at the Congress as well. So God bless you and your work and, you know, rock on.
All right. Thank you very much.
God bless you. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.